Dr. C here. Before we begin, I'd like to make sure that you're aware that this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. BetterHelp is a leading provider of online therapy, and they provide video, phone, or live chat sessions with a licensed professional therapist. It's affordable, and you can connect with your therapist within 48 hours. Now, as a special offer to our Surviving Narcissism listeners, they'll offer a 10% discount for your first month of professional therapy. All you have to do is go to BetterHelp.com, that's BetterHelp.com/Surviving Narcissism Podcast. Now, I know that many of you would find online therapy to be quite life-changing, and so go to BetterHelp.com/Surviving Narcissism Podcast, and many thanks to the people at BetterHelp for sponsoring our podcast.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Surviving Narcissism Podcast. I'm Michelle, the Program Director, and I would like to start this episode with a quick introduction. For those of you not familiar with Surviving Narcissism, it is the product of many years of work done by Dr. Les Carter. Dr. Carter is a best-selling author and therapist with more than 40 years of experience specializing in anger management and narcissistic personality disorder. This week, Dr. C's topic is The Many Faces of a Narcissist Control.
Hello, Team Healthy. Dr. C here again, and I'm so pleased to be with you one more time. Hey, before we get going, I just want to let you know I really appreciate you allowing me to be on your journey with you. I know that many of you have encountered some very difficult people along the way on your journey, and you're trying to make sense of it all. And when we talk about narcissism, we're really talking about human nature, about what makes people tick, and it kind of gets to the core of so much of what could go potentially wrong in a relationship, and it's necessary for us to have an education about it so that we're not going to contribute to it, but we're going to actually be able to make strides away from it, and we're going to be able to know what to do with people who haven't gotten their act together quite yet. So today, I want to zero in on one particular part of narcissism that's right down at the heart and soul of what it's all about, and that is the narcissist craving to be in control. Narcissists don't just have a normal control desire. They must be in control, and I'm going to talk with you today about how many different ways their need for control shows up. I call it the many faces of a narcissist control. Now, before we go there, let's try to put a little perspective on this and remind ourselves, having a desire to be in control in and of itself is not a wrong thing. For example, I know that you like it when you have somebody in your world who's well-organized. They're known as being responsible and reliable. Maybe they're the teaching kind of person, or they're the kind of person that can give you directives whenever you're a little bit confused, and they can kind of help take you to the finish line on all sorts of things that are done that need to get done. They're the kind of people that when they tell you they're going to do something, they follow through on it. That's a good form of control. And those are the kind of individuals that give the whole concept of control a good name. But then when we zero in on narcissism, it's like, well, there are so many things that a narcissist brings to the equation that can mess things up in a very quick kind of way, keeping in mind that narcissism starts with being way too impressed with oneself, too enamored with one's preferences and desires, to the extent that it's like, well, let's see, there are my needs and that's enough. And so that's all they want to consider. It's like, it's all about me. And then they become super imposing and they become overbearing, and you know the whole story. And as a result, yeah, they have that self-centeredness and they have that lack of empathy and they have that need to be superior, but along with it becomes not just a communication style, but just a thinking style, a part of their essence that says, I'm never going to be satisfied unless I'm the one who's in charge here. I have to be in control. I've got to get things done according to my desire. Now, I'll just ask a rhetorical question. You know anybody in your world that acts or thinks that way? And I'm sure that some of you, if you're drinking coffee, you're spewing it right now. It's like, yeah, I know plenty of folks that think that way. Let's understand that when we talk about controlling individuals, it's going to be necessary for us to break away from common stereotypes. When we think of a controlling person, we tend to think of somebody who's extremely forceful. We tend to think of that individual who's pushy and bossy and authoritarian. We tend to think of that overpowering kind of person. And sure enough, that person is a controlling person. And yet there's so much more going on when we're talking about how people try to exert their control over others. And so what I've done is I'm going to start out here by showing you that I kind of put things into three loose categories. There's nothing scientific about this. This is just my good old Les Carter way of trying to describe the whole phenomenon of control. Three different categories of ways that people try to, or they illustrate that they're wanting to be in control. Now, sure enough, category number one is what we would refer to as the overt dominant style of control. And you know that there are some individuals, as soon as they walk in the room, it's like, well, here comes Mr. Boss, or here comes Miss, I've got to have everything my way. And they leave no room for the imagination on that. They're just going to be very forceful. They're just known for being very free with their opinions. They can be very pushy and very overwhelming in the way that they engage with you. I mean, you know, there's some people that's just like, well, if you express an opinion, for example, okay, now we're fixing to have a competition because I have to explain to you why my opinion is better than your opinion. And they go into that high control mode, trying to force you into their paradigm so that they can feel comfortable about themselves. That's that overt dominant style of control. And these are the individuals who are inclined towards using an elevated tone of voice, very threatening sometimes, or very argumentative. Whenever they get riled up, they're going to have that finger pointing straight at you. And you know what it's like when they are trying to make a point and they're pointing that finger at you at the same time. They can be easily argumentative. They can just turn simple conversations into conflicts. They're contrarian. And so these are the individuals that leave no room for doubt. Yeah, there's a controlling individual, and they can be terribly obnoxious. Okay, that's level number one. But then we can say there's a second level of control. And some of the things that I'll say here, they'll make a lot of sense. And others, it's like, oh, well, I hadn't thought about that. But now that you mentioned it. And so when we have what we might call a mid-level style of control, there are some individuals who are controlling in the sense that they just talk too much. You're around those people some. Whenever you're around them, you want to try to get a word in edgewise, and they can be friendly and all, but they just yammer on and on. Or it might be that that's the individual that as you're trying to say something, they won't let you finish a sentence. And they may say something like, oh, that reminds me of, or did you hear about, and you're over here thinking, well, yeah, but can I at least finish my thought? And they just kind of run away with the conversation. That's their form of being in control. It could be that they're just kind of naturally known as a bit stubborn and, just set in their ways. I mean, they're not awful human beings, but it's like, well, you know, old grandpa over there, he has to have his dinner at 5 o'clock and he doesn't ask, no room for error on that, you know, that kind of stuff. It could be that in this mid-level form of control, that person may be the kind of individual that offers advice that nobody really particularly wants or needs, unsolicited advice. And again, from time to time, we may have our moments. For example, if somebody has a head cold and you might say something like, well, I had a head cold and took some extra vitamin C. Okay, that might be a little bit of advice that you're trying to say to that person. The strongly controlling person, though, does that constantly. Well, have you done this? Why don't you try that? Maybe if you said this instead of that, it might have turned out differently. That's a need to be in control. These people who have this mid-level form of control might have a problem with impatience. And have you ever thought of impatience as being tied to the need for control? And once you look at it, it's like, yeah, actually, there's a fixed notion that they have about how things are supposed to play out time-wise. These mid-level people might have a natural inclination toward annoyance or irritability. Do you see that tied to control? The implication is that they have an agenda that's there, and the agenda hasn't played out the way it's supposed to, and here comes that emotion. They have to have time parameters tightly maintained. And again, you can see that at some level, at a modest level, that can be normal. But narcissistic individuals, they take it beyond just that normal element. They may be too tight with their money. They may be the kind of people that have to tend too much to detail. They could be nitpickers, things like that. That would all be an indication that a person is in their control mode. And then we can say that there's a third category, and in layman's terms, we can call it muffled control. And when I say muffled, it's not loud and out there. In more psychological terminology, we'll call it the passive-aggressive form of control. But there are some individuals, they have a need for control, but they do it in passive kind of ways. As an example, you may have somebody that you ask a favor of, and they say, sure, I'll be glad to do it, and then they don't do it. In other words, say whatever needs to be said, but do whatever you want to do. That's control. By them being passively non-cooperative, it's like, don't tell me what to do. I mean, I'll say whatever you need to hear, but nobody tells me what to do. And right along with that is procrastination, or people who can be lazy or evasive, and just in general having a non-cooperation. Now, they may not be forceful and pushy, but it's kind of like dealing with that mule and you're trying to get them to come along on the road with you. It's like, not going to work today. I don't want to do it. People who give the silent treatment are sending messages of control. It may be that you have somebody that's a controlling person, and the way they display it is they offer half-hearted efforts. It's like, yeah, I guess I'll do it, but I'm going to do it in my way. And if it doesn't suit you, I don't care. It's just all about me. That's their control. Now, there's another style of control that fits into this same category, and that's the appeasing kind of individual. And many times these appeasing people can be very pleasant. They can be the people pleaser kind of person. And it's like, well, if I do A, B, and C for you, maybe that'll make you feel good. But sometimes their kindness or their helpfulness or their goodness can be a way of trying to keep people inside a box. And it comes more down to what their motive or intent is, that more so than behavior. It could be that passive-aggressive, muffled controller is somebody that just has an air of mystery, or you just don't know much about them. And in their mind, they're thinking, correct, and you're not going to know me because I don't want to be held accountable. I don't want anybody knowing anything that I don't need them to know. There are some individuals who are consistently inconsistent. All of these things that I'm talking about here reflect a desire to be in control. And then, like I say, when you take that element of narcissism with all of its self-absorption, and just, you know, that's part of the fusion that we have with all of this, you can see that it can be extremely disruptive. Now, when we watch a person who has this kind of tendency, and you realize, okay, there's so many different ways that it can play out, it's interesting to think, well, if I could get inside that person's head, what's really going on there? You know, why would they feel the need to be in control, whether it's in this overt or mid-level or muffled passive-aggressive style? Why does one person talk themselves into thinking that it's okay to control, knowing that that other individual is going to be impacted? And if it's a negative impact, who cares? Why do they do that? Well, multiple things are going on behind the scenes there. Let's see if we can break that out. When a person has this this persistent need to be in control, first, you can say that in a relationship, such as it might be, there's no particular sense of us. Another one of the primary ingredients that we know that goes along with narcissism is an inability or an unwillingness to empathize. And when I say empathize, I mean going inside somebody else's feelings and perceptions and experiences in such a way that you demonstrate there's a real understanding. And it can be a very healthy way of saying, well, I know I have my thoughts and feelings, but I know you do too. So why don't we go into that space where we share evenly what that might imply? Narcissist is like, I don't need to know about you. I know about me. That's enough. I don't care. And as a result, they don't have that sense of us. But then taking it a little bit further, what they're really saying in their need for control is, I don't know what to do when differentness shows up. Differences threaten me. Your differences threaten me. You see, one of the things that's so necessary when we're children and we're growing up, particularly in grade school and then hitting a real crescendo in the adolescent years, we need to have this sense that I refer to as emotional competence. And by that, I mean, we need to know why we feel as we do and how we're going to manage things and how we're going to maneuver through strains and difficulties. Because as we have a sense of competence, then when people come along and say, well, I think differently or feel differently, then we can say, well, let's sit down and talk about it, just like I like to do within myself. I want to do it with you. And we go into that kind of space in a very constructive kind of way. The controlling adult narcissist is like, I don't know how to do that. And most of them really have not really been trained that well to know how to deal with differences. In their mind, it's like, well, just conform. And they tend to be very black and white and dogmatic in their approach towards people and circumstances. And then as we understand that, then we'll take it just a little bit further and we'll realize that the more that narcissist goes into their controlling patterns, what they're really saying is complexity threatens me. Now, keep in mind, we have close to 8 billion people on the planet, and none of us are exactly the same. So we need to make room for a bit of complexity because it's a complex world out there. People have different backstories, they have different experiences and cultural influences, et cetera, et cetera. And the narcissist is like, I'm afraid that if I go too much into that and I let go of my need to be in control, I might lose myself, when in fact that doesn't necessarily have to be the case at all, but that's where they come from. And so the controlling narcissist illustrates that their security is built upon another person's compliance. I feel secure when you comply with me. I feel secure if I can make you conform to me. And it's very externally based. They don't have enough of that internal sense of their own dignity and well-being established to where they can draw upon that. It's like, well, the real way that I can feel good about life is I can make other individuals out there just check in with me. The more the merrier, the better that'll be. And as a result of that, then, we can see that when narcissists are high in their control mode, your independent thinking is something they don't want to have to come to terms with. In fact, it makes the narcissist feel unnecessary. So, I mean, it can be something very simple, whether it's at work or inside a family or beyond. If you say, well, I have a different preference and I have a way of thought that's a little bit out there, then the narcissist can be thinking, well, if you're that different from me, then I guess that means I must be unnecessary. Get back over here and be what I tell you to be. And as a result, when you have independent preferences and ideas and things of that nature, they're thinking, we have to stamp this out. And you'll notice that they become very argumentative and they ask those cornering questions, all the things that go along with their need to be in control. In addition, we can also say that the more a narcissist goes into and remains in that control mode, what they're basically saying is separate opinions are a nuisance. Separate opinions are a menace, as far as I can discern. The narcissist, they're very simplistic. Basically, it's like, well, the more I can get everybody to think exactly like me, then my life is going to be easy. and they want to have ease, they want to have comfort, but they want to do it. If it's at your expense, who cares? I'd like for you to be aware of my video courses. One of them is entitled Free to Be, Finding Yourself Despite the Controllers in Your Life. Now, inside this course are various modules, and inside each module, it breaks down into various lessons with a video, teaching documents, and then also questions that go along with it. For example, inside Free to Be, you'll learn how controllers want to invite you into their games, but then you'll also learn about the seven principles of freedom, how to develop self-trust, and much more. Now, if you are interested in enrolling in the classes, you could go to our survivingnarcissism.tv website, click the link for courses, and you'll find that one and others. And I hope that you would find them to be quite therapeutic.
And now, back to Surviving Narcissism with Dr. Carter.
And then basically, there's a certain strong pessimism that the narcissist is drawing upon. The controlling narcissist has convinced himself or herself to think, if I let you be you, I don't know that it's going to work out very well for me. That's the pessimism. And all of that tells us that the more controlling an individual is, the more they reveal exactly how insecure, and then let's use the word inept, they are as they engage with the people in front of them. Okay. Now, intellectually, plenty of controlling people might come to the conclusion that says, well, I realize that it's good to have free choice leading the way when we engage with one another. And so you know what they do with that notion? They think to themselves, well, yeah, that's a very true thought. Free choice needs to lead the way for me. And then you'll hear that next word, but I don't know about you. And we go back and say they have a very low level of trust in other individuals. They don't really have a real strong confidence that other people will come through. And so when you say, well, I want to have some free choice too, they can come right back at you with an attitude that more or less implies, are you kidding me? They may actually say it out loud. Or they may say something like, well, you better not be too outlandish, or do you really think it's a good idea if I just let everybody else just think what they want to think and be what they want to think, as if that's going to be some sort of disastrous kind of thing? That's how they think. And so when I hear something like that, my reaction is, well, I know that you like the privilege to choose for yourself. Why can't you allow other people the same kind of privilege? And in their narcissism, the narcissist will come back and say, because I know better, because I am better. And that's what that control really is all about. It's a self-esteem kind of an issue for them, but they try to build a false sense of self-esteem because their esteeming of themselves is so contingent upon making everybody else have loyalty back toward them and fealty back toward them. And they build themselves up by bringing other individuals down. So when we look at something like that, you can see that the real truth is that narcissists truly feel inept when others don't get inside their grooves. And let's just take it a little bit further. They feel like you're rejecting them. And so it becomes your assignment to have to read what's on their mind. If you don't read their mind very well, they'll just tell you. They have suspended abstract thinking, and instead they're very black and white. You're either with me or you're not with me. You're either right or you're wrong. You either have facts or you have chaos. You're either smart or you have stupid. And there's no particular in between when you deal with these individuals. Now, here you are, and I'm sure that many of you, as you're listening to this, you're just nodding your head thinking, oh, I have been around so many individuals who are like this, that inability to trust, and they can't manage imperfections and all. And basically, it just becomes very obvious that there are certain key notions that healthy individuals want to incorporate that these narcissists in their control desire just simply can't do. For example, the narcissist who has that strong need for control simply cannot say, "I honor you just as you are," or "we can figure things out when you and I have separate thoughts or feelings." They can't think like that. Or, "I like to believe that I'm capable, and I get it that you want to think that you're capable too. Let's see if we can pool our resources together." Wouldn't it be nice if they could say that? Or how about another one? Let's be civil when we're different from one another. We can at least do that. Or the non-controlling person might say something like, "Well, I like to learn. Is there something that you might teach me when we find out that we don't think the same?" And that would be a healthy kind of a way of engaging with others. And so you can see that when the narcissist goes directly into that high control mode and they bypass what I just said right there, their control can be described as insecurity in action. Now, just so that you can kind of have a good check and balance on your own self, and because I know that there, if I'm honest, we can each come up with notions that say, "Well, you know, there are times when I let the control dimension cross the line sometimes, and sometimes I can be a little inappropriate." So as we understand this about the person that's got the strong narcissistic tendency, why don't we each kind of look inside and ask, is there something that I need to do inside my gut so that I don't go in that direction just like the narcissist does? So I'm going to wrap up here with six thoughts that I want you to consider as you try to make sure that you're not that controlling individual. So thought number one is make sure you check your overall reputation. When people think about who you are and how you present yourself, do they think of you as being overbearing and superimposing and easily irritable, like all the things that I just mentioned? Or would you say, "Well, I'm pretty certain that my overall reputation actually is accommodating or accepting or blending, or I can have firmness while at the same time having fairness"? Hopefully your reputation is going to be such that it's not just overcome by all the controlling kinds of ingredients. A second thing you want to check within yourself is notice your tone of voice, particularly when you have differences with another individual. Is your tone of voice coercive or persuasive or insistent? Or can you talk about differences while also remaining calm and remaining approachable and available? It's possible that you can have both calmness and firmness at the same time. Or a third thought I'd like for you to consider is, what is your listening to telling ratio? Your listening to telling ratio. Controllers, well, their telling ratio is way high and their listening part of the ratio is way low. Non-controlling people, yeah, they'll tell folks what they think and what they feel and believe, but it's much more evened out. They also like to listen. It's like, "Well, I know I have some things to say, but I'm going to assume that you do too." And they'll ask open-ended questions and they're willing to hear you out. What's your listening to telling ratio? Now, in addition, a fourth thing that you can do to check yourself with respect to this is, what's your frequency of registering emotions like agitation and frustration? That would be part of that mid-level form of control. When people have a chronic undertow of that annoyance and irritability and agitation, the implication is they're just trying real hard not to pounce, but they're barely containing themselves. If you're the kind of person that can have more of a sense of patience and more of a sense of pondering when things go on, and if something crummy happens, rather than jumping on it with annoyance, there can be a thought that says, "Okay, we've got something going on here. I think we can figure it out." Can you contain that agitation in a very real kind of way? A fifth thing that I want you to consider is, are you able to show tolerance for people who are truly different? You know, it's one thing to say, "Well, I don't feel the need to control people," when they happen to be exactly like me. But when you encounter people that have whatever, whether it's lifestyle differences or very different beliefs or experiences or interpretations, are you able to show tolerance for it? And notice that I'm not saying you have to just go along and drop everything you believe, but you know that you want them to tolerate you and your differences. Can you give that to them in reverse? And then finally, number six, when you are working on projects or when you're trying to take care of responsibilities, are you the kind of person that likes to receive input from other individuals? I know me well enough to know that there are plenty of things that I am capable of, but there's some things that I need some help in. Are you the kind of person that can receive input from others? So let's keep in mind a common theme that I have, and that is the more you try to control, ultimately, the more out of control you can be. The best way to be in control is to quit trying to be so in control. Controllers are all about wanting to have influence, and you're going to be at your influential best when you're the kind of person that's able to offer respect and honor and acceptance and openness. So I know that that narcissistic individual may have a lot of struggle when it comes to that whole issue of control because they have so many other ingredients that are attached to it. But I'm hoping you and I on here on Team Healthy can say, well, I'm aware of that and I know that I have that same desire within myself, but I'm going to contain it inside the parameters of healthiness. And we go back to that that notion. It's an us that's here. It's not just all about me. And when you're able to factor that in, then I think you'll find that your level of influence goes up and you find yourself being more in control, even though you're not trying to be so, well, in control. It's funny how that works. It's called paradox. All right, Team Healthy. I hope this gives you some good things to think about. And I hope you join me over on YouTube as well when we have my videos there. And I'm going to continue to bring some good input for you, I hope, that'll make you think. And in doing so, I hope you grow and you're going to be the kind of person that stands for DRC, dignity, respect, and civility. That's what we stand for here on Team Healthy. I will see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. We're so glad to have you on Team Healthy.